We're going to dedicate this class to the elevation of the soul of Shoshana Florita Bat Mariuta. Mariuta. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing it right. But her neshama should have an aliyah. And was also dedicated anonymous to some few individuals for them to have the merit to do tshuva. But Hashem knows who we're talking about. All Am Yisrael needs to do tshuva. So we want to talk a little bit about the Omer, and there's a lot of questions about it, and a lot of things that people are not aware of what's really going on in the Omer. And we hear all these rules, not to take haircuts, not to buy things, not to do, not to travel, not to initiate new things. There's all sorts of rules what to do and what not to do. But really, what is the Omer? So we're going to talk today very general about what the Omer is, and in the next couple of weeks we'll talk more in depth about what can be achieved and what do I really need to focus on. But the Omer, where it originates, it's a period of journeys. It's a period of walking. And at the time when the Jews left Mitzrayim, they left Egypt, going into Mount Sinai, they had 49 days of journeys. And they were walking with their feet. So this entire period is a period of a journey. That I'm going from one place to another place to another place. And the way I do it is in the motion of walking. And I'm going from one place to another. And this is in the period between Pesach and Shavuot. And it's the time of 49 days that I have to go in steps, in levels. And every day I go to another level and another level. And these levels are called gates, she'arim. You notice that when we count the gates of impurity, we say there are 49 gates of impurity. We don't say levels, we say gates. And the levels that I have to go through the entire Omer is every day I go up one level. Or you can look at it in a different way, that every day a gate opens and I'm going through the gate into the next level. But the entire time is a period of a journeys. And I have to internalize that this is the time when I have the opportunity to go on the journey of my life. And it's a time of refinement, a time of growth. Now, the Sfirat HaOmer is, we called it Sfira, for coming from the word of counting. But Sfira also comes from the word Sapir. Sapir is to enlighten. If you remember when we learned about the Ark of Noah, it's talking about that it had a window on the top. And our sages argue if it was actually a window, because it says that the window brought light into the Ark. So there's an argument in our sages whether it was a window that brought in the light. And some of the sages say it wasn't a window. Rather, it was a stone that is called sapir, like a sapphire. And this stone was like a lamp. It lit up the ark and it brought light into the ark. Because when you're thinking of it, a whole year, they're in a closed ark. There wasn't windows there. And it was three levels, meaning that it should be totally dark. Now, you can't really light fire because the ark was made out of wood. And not only that, I mean, there's no ventilation. Where would the smoke go to? Meaning that there was some way that the ark was lit up, and that was lit up with this stone that is called sapir. Sapir lights up. So the word Sfirat HaOmer, you can explain it as counting, but it's also enlightening. Brings a certain light into the universe. And what do we count? We count the days in a calculation of 7 times 7. And even when we repeat it, we go to the Sfira of Chesed, and we will go through all the Sfirot that are 7 times 7. Chesed Sheva Chesed, Gvura Sheva Chesed, Tiferet Sheva Chesed. So the structure is a 7 times 7. And this number 7, this is the structure, the foundation of the world is built on the number 7. You have 7 days of creation. Everything comes in sevens. Even when Noah brought in the animals into the ark, we talked about Noah, he brought seven animals that are kosher, he brought seven of them. And everything goes around the seven. We have seven sefirot. We have seven gates to our body, two eyes, two nostrils, two ears and a mouth. We find this seven repeating itself all the time. And the whole period of Sfirat HaOmer is that every day a new light is being revealed into the world. And I have to tap into it. I have to channel myself into this time to be able to receive some of this light. Now, what comes above seven comes the number eight. And eight is above nature. Nature, we see that the world was created in 7 days. Everything has seven, if you notice it. Even in simple things like the chords in music. You have do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, si, do. You don't have an eighth chord. When Mashiach is going to come, we're actually going to have an eighth chord. Because really when you think of it, why do we have only seven chords? So, even when we know that when Mashiach is going to come, then the violin that Mashiach is going to have is going to be an eight chord violin. So, the number eight represents above the nature. And the number eight represents the Sefirah that is called Bina. We spoke about it just before. That in the structure of the Sefirot, one way of looking of it is that you have the intellect, the Mochin is Chochmah, Bina and Da'at. The acronym of Chabad. But one way of looking at it is that it's counted Keter Chochmah Bina, without the Da'at. Which means that Bina is the next closest Sfira to the rest of the Midot. Now, Bina, we explained before, it's the Sfira that is called Ima. This is how it's called in Kabbalah. And the mother, the Sfira of Bina, it births the Shefa, the abundance, into the Midot. That's the whole concept of Mikveh. Because the Mikveh is rejuvenating the power that comes from the Sfira of Bina. That's why you see that the Mikveh has to have a certain measurement of water that is called Arba'im Se'ah, 40 Se'ah. What is this 40? Is there are 40 gates, Arba'im Sha'rei Bina, 40 gates of Bina. And the whole motion of Bina, something that resembles the concept of Mikveh, is a womb. And the baby is in the mother's womb in water. So for 9 months, the baby is in water. It doesn't eat, it doesn't drink. It's totally nourished by the mother. Whatever the mother eats, the baby gets. The mother's upset, the baby will get the nerves, the negative energy. The mother is all happy and joyful, then the baby will get it. The baby is 100% nourished by the mother, and very easy, is in water. Doesn't need to eat. Is with his eyes open, the mouth is open, all the gates of the body are open. The miracle here is all the gates that are open when we are alive, they're closed while the baby is in the womb, and the other way around, whatever is closed in our life is open in the womb. So the baby's eyes are open in the womb, and his mouth is open, the nose is open, nothing, the water doesn't come in. The second the baby comes out to the world, then the nekavim, the holes that are open, they seal, and the ones that are sealed open. Like the rectum and some other holes, that's when they open, when they go out of the womb. So we see that the concept of the baby being in the womb, this is a manifestation of the neshama being nourished by the sphere of Bina. Which means that whenever I get disconnected from Bina, I have to get this rejuvenation back. And this is the concept of Mikveh. Because in the cycle, when the woman has her cycle, spiritually she gets disconnected from the Sfira of Bina. And what she needs to do is she needs to go to the Mikveh to go back to its source and to connect her neshama back to its source, where she gets her abundance. That's why women are more obligated in the sefirah, in the mitzvah of bin, of mitzvah of mikveh, because a man doesn't have the cycle. The woman has the cycle because that's one of the curses that Chava got in the curses after the sin. The Adam HaRishon got 10 curses, Chava got 10 curses, and the snake got 10 curses. And the land got 9 curses, totaling 39. So the 39, this is off the subject, but the 39 labors that were prohibited on Shabbat, that's the source of it. And people wonder, well, what is these prohibitions? Why are we not allowed to do 39 labors on Shabbat? Then the source for it comes because of the curses that Adam, Chava, the snake, and the land got cursed. And that's how we do the tikkun. This is what's called the tikkun olam. So one of the curses that Chava got, Chava is known as Eve, but we call her Chava. That, by the way, her name was actually Chaya. It wasn't Chava. Her original name was Chaya. A lot of people, now it's a more common name to name their daughter Chaya. And people wonder where this name came from. So the name came because the original woman, the first woman in the world, her name was Chaya. And it says in the Torah, Em Kol Chai. Later on, when she sinned, then her name changed to Chava. For two reasons. First of all, after the sin, Adam, he divorced her. He gave her a get and he told her, I don't want to be your husband anymore. Because you made me sin. So for 130 years, Adam and Chava were split. And in this time came the snake, and he told Chava, or her name was Chaya, now that you are on the market, you are single right now, and there's nobody else here, I'm going to marry you. And snake in Aramaic is called Chivya, and he told her, my name is Chivya, so your name should be Chava, should be changed. The teachings of Kabbalah explain to us that she damaged the yud of the name of Hashem, Yudke Vavke, by doing her sin. And since she had that yud in her possession, her name was Chaya, the chet, and then the yudke, she damaged the yud. So the yud was pulled into the klipa and formed a vav out of it. So instead of a yud making Chaya, it became a vav and made her a chava. So, but her original name was Chaya. One of the curses that she got was the cycle, that she has to have her cycle once a month, that the blood will become impure, and the blood will come out of her. That's one of the way of fixing it. So the way to go back to its original state is to go into a mikveh, because the mikveh has the power of bringing the neshama back into the sphere of Bina. And men, they're not obligated in a mikveh, but they still do it because men also damage their neshama by pulling it away from its source. And the source of abundance is the sphere of Bina, which means that when I need to be rejuvenated spiritually, I have to go to my source.
Also, automatically, after being with the woman, doesn't he have to go to the mikveh?
Yeah, but this is more a takana. It's not a halacha. That the man, yes, a man after he's with his wife, having marital relations, he has to go to the mikveh because he has sperm on him. And you can't say Torah words with a little bit of, with sperm on your body. So of course, but this is not a halakha from the Torah. What happens to a man, he lives in the middle of nowhere. He's not going to find the mikveh. So I know I have a few friends that they're rabbis in different shuls. I have a friend in South America and in India. They don't have a mikveh there, so they go to the ocean. Or they go to just to a pool. But, excuse me?
Men don't say a bracha.
No. Men do not say a bracha in the mikveh. But the right way of doing it is that a man, after he has relations with his wife, is to go to the mikveh. Because he has some sperm on it. And it's not the right way to say words of Torah and to pray when he's not 100% clean. But it's not a must. A man is only obligated to go once a year to the mikveh, and that's on Yom Kippur. And if a man can't find his way to the mikveh after he's been with his wife, then he can take even a long shower. As long as there's 13 liters of water washing him, it's almost as equivalent to a mikveh. And I travel a lot. There's no mikvehs where I go. I jump in people's pools. So it's not the same effect. Not too long ago, I was in a tour, and I end up in Phoenix in Arizona, and there wasn't a mikveh there. And I said, it's Erev Shabbat, I want to go to the mikveh. And they were like, they felt uncomfortable, what should we do? So I was like, is there anybody here with a pool? Yeah, of course. So I said, okay, let's go to the pool. So some brave men were like, okay, we'll go with you. And it was January, and even though it's Phoenix, it was still ice cold, and I just walked into the pool. I take my bathing suit off, and I use the pool as a mikveh. And they jump after me, and they're like, what are these guys? A crazy person. So a man is not obligated, but it's the right thing to do. Needless to say that the Baal Shem Tov explains, and even before that, the Arizal and many other mystical teachings, that it's good for a man to go every day to the mikveh. Because the mikveh is so powerful. If a person would know the power of a mikveh, he was not going to leave the mikveh. And if a woman would know what a mikveh does to her, she would never even miss the mitzvah of mikveh. And I know it's personal, but I always give this example, that when I became religious and I started affecting my parents, at some point I told my mom, I know you might be uncomfortable with what I'm about to tell you, but have you been to the mikveh? And she was like, well, I've been to the mikveh the night before I got married. And I was like, have you ever been to the mikveh after that? And she was like, never. So I told her, so you have to go to the mikveh. So she told me, but I don't have my cycle anymore. I'm close to being 70. So there's nothing to do with it. From the last time you had your cycle, you didn't go to the mikveh. You have a very strong impurity on you. And believe it or not, it affects me and my siblings. It affects your kids. So you have to go to the mikveh. And it was not so easy to tell my father that she has to go to the mikveh. And they went, they did the whole thing. They were separated for 7 weeks, and she did the whole thing. And she went to the mikveh in her late 60s. And she said that it was the most amazing experience she ever had. And she was like, I went out, I felt like a rock was removed off me. So when a person really understands the power of mikveh, then they don't want to lose that. And a man, even though he's not obligated, a man can take a long shower, but for a man even to go every day to the mikveh, what it does to their soul, to their brain, to their body, is unbelievable. So the point is, we don't want to talk about mikveh, but we want to understand that the source that allows the abundance to come into my midot comes from the Sfira of Bina. And if I, you have a question?
You said 7 weeks, I said 7 days.
7 days, I said 7 weeks, yeah. But so thank you. No, they separated for the amount of time that they need to be separated. You have to count 7 days. I mean, when a woman who has the cycle, she has to count the 5 days, and as long as once she stops, the blood stops coming, then she counts 7 clean days. My mom didn't have that. So she only had to count 7 days. She had to do what's called a hefsek, and then count 7 days. So I'm sorry, she didn't separate for 7 weeks.
But it was told that it is retroactive. It affects
100%. It's retroactive. That's what I kept telling my mom. The 40 years you didn't go, one time you go, retroactively it affects all the way back. And I told her, by you not going to the mikveh, it's affecting me. Because you are my mom, and our parents, we are connected to our parents spiritually all the time. So I'm connected to my father through what's called the mochin. The father is the mochin. And I connected to my mother through the midot. And believe it or not, a father that thinks not pure things during the day, it will affect his kids. So a man that is purifying his eyes, not looking in the wrong places, purifying his thoughts, it affects the kids right away, like Wi-Fi. It doesn't matter. And a lot of people, then they come and they tell me, my kids have a learning disorder, a behavior disorder, and all sorts of things like that. Then I would quietly tell to the man, not in front of his wife, stop looking at all the places that you're looking at. And start thinking a little bit more pure things, because it's affecting your child. And what you think, it affects the child right away. Same thing with the women, with their midot, their emotions. Women are much more emotional. The emotion of the woman will affect her child. So when parents have problems with their kids, and all sorts of issues they see in the child, the parent has to see, okay, that has to be reflected back on me. So if my child has a certain emotional issue, the mother has to say, wait a minute, I have to work on my midot. And the father, when sees that, then the father has to work on what he has to work on. But this is totally off the subject. I want to stick with the subject, and then we'll do the questions, if you don't mind, after. So just because we're sidetracking too much and we want to concentrate on the Omer. The point is that where our starting is that our Shefa, our abundance, comes from the Sfira of Bina. And in order for me to reach to my source, to get this abundance, what's called a Shefa, I have to reach to the Sfira of Bina. Therefore, I have to refine all my Midot. And the Midot are seven Midot, starting from Chesed, Gvura, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, and then Malchut. And I have to refine all of them. This corresponds to the 49 gates, and there are 49 gates of impurity, and there are 49 gates of purity. This is called Memtet Sharei Tuma and Memtet Sharei Kedusha. There's always impurity and purity. Now, what is purity and impurity? It doesn't mean something dirty. A lot of people say, what do you mean? You're calling me impure now? Well, why are you insulting me? Because a lot of people say, you know, you didn't go to the mikveh, you're impure. And people get offended from that. Or you talk about a certain animal. The concept between pure and impure, impure in Hebrew is tameh, and pure in Hebrew is kadosh. Now, what is pure? Something that has a lot of light in it. Spiritual light, of course. And what is impure? Then there's lack of light. There's no lack. There's no light. Now, what is this light? This is not the light that you see from the light bulb. Rather, a he'ara. Light in Hebrew is called or. But what is the motion that the light does? Is he'ara. It enlightens. So something that has a lot of light, spiritual light in it, it's holy. It's pure. Something that the light was removed, then it's becoming impure. That's what it is. It doesn't mean dirty. It doesn't mean something not clean. It means that there's a lack of kedusha, lack of holiness. So when I have 49 gates of purity, it means that 49 levels that the light that shines from the sphira from above, it enlightens it. It's pure. It's full. It's like you walk into a big room. If there's no light into the room can be a gorgeous room. But you don't see anything. You don't benefit from the beauty of the room. You can have beautiful artwork on the walls and a beautiful design. Turn off the lights, you're not going to see anything. So the concept of purity and impurity is how much light is in that vessel, this kli. And this is what I have to do. The entire time of Sfirat HaOmer is I have to refine my kelim. I have kelim. Kelim is a kli, is a vessel. And I have 49 days to refine it and to clean it and to inject, so to say, this pure light into these vessels. And it takes me 49 days. Why? Because I can't skip levels. I can't say, oh, I'm so special, I'll just jump two at a time. There's no such a thing. It has to come in an order of development. You can't build first floor and then jump to the fifth floor and then jump to the 20th floor and then come back to the seventh floor. You can't do that. It has to go in order. So the counting has to be in a motion of development. First one, then two, then three, then four. I cannot jump. Nobody can jump. You cannot say, you know, today I don't feel like refining the midah of chesed. Let me jump straight away to hod. I don't need to go through the order. The order is that I have to go by the steps. This is called hitpatchut, to develop. And every day, I'm developing one level. The same way we mentioned before about a fetus. You can't say, okay, let me skip from month three to month five. The baby will not develop. The baby has to develop according to its time. And Baruch Hashem, now we have the knowledge that within 6 weeks, this is developed. 8 weeks, that is developed. 9 weeks, this part is developed. And if Chas v'Shalom, this development is not going right, then there's going to be a problem. So same thing here, I have to develop the midot. The refinement, I have to come in an order that is going one step after the other. It cannot be skipped. That's why we're counting them. Because we're counting them with our mouth. So that way I know, okay, today is, that's what we say, Hayom, is such and such, to know what I need to redevelop. Now, if you notice on the how we read the Sfirat HaOmer, we start by mentioning how many, where are we holding. But really, the important part is the end, when I say the Ribono Shel Olam, and then I mention which midah I'm refining. So I would say, Im Pagamti Bechesed Shebegvura, or whatever, and then I can reflect on what I need to refine. So first I have to count it, to say, oh, today I'm in the 12th day. Okay, what's the 12th day? Oh, today is Hod Shebegvura. But the point of the Sfira is, A, I count it so I know where I'm holding. But mainly I have to know which light I have to tune into, because every day in these 49 days, a certain light is being revealed. And I have to tap into it, channel into it, and derive this godly revelation. Now, why do I do that? Because on Pesach, on Lel Seder, the entire 49 gates are bombarded on me in one night. 49 types of godly revelations is being revealed to me on the light of Lel Seder. If I sit around the table and I eat the matzah and I read the Haggadah and I drink the four cups of wine and I do all the things that I'm supposed to do, the godly revelation that shines on Pesach, on Lel Seder, is so powerful that we call it a Lel Shimurim. It's such a powerful night. That was the only night that the Bnei Israel were able to be removed out of their exile, out of Mitzrayim. And we mentioned that we had so many classes about Pesach, is that the night of Lel Seder, it's such a powerful night. I don't feel it, I don't see it, but all 49 gates are revealed in one shot. It's like mega power of godly revelation is being bestowed on us for one night. Now, I'm not a vessel to receive it. So this comes as a hit. Why? To wake me up. Now I have 49 days to start digesting it. And every day one sfira, one light. So when comes Shavuot, I refined all 49 vessels to then receive it in a nice, subtle way. That's why we were able to get the Torah that night. So on the night of Pesach, I'm not able to receive it. This is what's called Yitaruta Dil'ela, an awakening from above. It's just shining on me. It's like the alarm clock that has the first sound. It just wakes me up. Now the alarm clock will keep on going for another 10-15 minutes and my hand goes like that. So the night of Pesach is the first sound, is to wake me up. Now I have 49 days to start climbing these steps. Now if I do it right and I start refining every day one vessel, then on the night on Shavuot I will be receptive to receive this godly revelation of accepting the Torah. And I might not accept it physically, but I will accept it spiritually. So really, Pesach is the most important holiday. And we mentioned that in all the classes that we had in the last month, how Pesach is the most important night. This is, it's called Lel Seder. We mentioned that, I'm just going to repeat it. Why is it called Lel Seder? Technically it should be called Lel Pesach, or Lel Matzah, or whatever. Why Seder? So Seder is order. Because this is when the order starts. This is the foundation. Now it starts, and now I'm going to start going by the order to start building these levels. And it all starts on Pesach. Now we're already after the fact. We're already 12 days after. But I still have the ability to start refining my kelim. Now, the thing is that what I need to understand is that on Pesach, this light was given to me, so to say, as a present. Now the reality in the universe is whatever is given to me as a present doesn't remain. It goes back. Any type of revelation that Hashem gives to me that comes as a present, it will be taken back. That's why the world was created, so to say. Because before the world was created, the Zohar explains that the godly revelation was given for free as a present to the souls. And they were benefiting this godly revelation, but at some point the souls approach God and say, oh, listen, we feel that you're just giving and giving and giving, and we want to give something back. We're feeling that you're giving us like a free present. The Zohar calls it Nehama Deksufa, bread of shame, that like a poor person is being given all the time. So Hashem says, no problem, I'll give you the opportunity to give back, to do something, to earn it. So this is Bechlal, a good lesson in life, is whatever is being given to you for free, it's not going to remain. It's going to go. Rather, Hashem says, this is the world of doing, this is Olam Asiya. You have to gain and to earn what you want, what you're going to get. So on Pesach we get this godly revelation as a present. It just comes, but it disappears. Chol HaMoed passes, we celebrate the last day of Pesach, and the light disappears. That's why everybody, the day after Pesach, the energy falls down. People get sick, people get depressed, people get sad, everybody, it's affecting them in a different way. And they don't understand why. Because you're in such a high for a week, and then it disappears. Now I have to start working to gain this light back. And I have to work for it. This is called Yegia. Now when I work hard, that's when the light will stay. So if I work on myself the entire 7 weeks, then the light comes back again on Shavuot. No, it will stay. It will be here to stay. But I have to toil. So reading the Sefirat HaOmer, it takes exactly 3 minutes at night. This is not the real refinement. That's just to remind me what I need to do. But I need to every day refine one aspect of my neshama. And I have to look into myself. And I have to go from one place to another. Hashem is being kind. He's giving me 49 days. I have to understand. It's not about reading the Sefira. This is just to remind me. The point is that I have to understand that I'm going now on a journey. And I need to know in my journey, what is the exile that I came out from on Pesach? What is the exile that I'm battling? So one person is battling their exile and battling their sadness or their depression or their anger or whatever it is. We all have something that puts us in exile. Now exile is not being chained to a metal ball and like a prisoner, or to building something like a slave. Exile is something that limits me. The country where the Jews were in exile was called Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim comes from the word Meitzarim, a Meitzar, something that limits me. So, when our sages teach us, Bechol Dor V'Dor Chayav Adam Lirot Atzmo Kilu Yatza MiMitzrayim, every generation a person has to see himself like he left Egypt, meaning that I don't need to picture myself that I'm carrying bricks. Rather, I'm stuck in some type of an exile that puts me in a limitation. So if I have a problem with anger, that's my exile, because I'm stuck in a state of limitation. And if I have a problem with being sad or being jealous, whatever it is, in most cases I have a few things that put me in a limitation. I can be lazy, I can be whatever it is. I need to recognize what is my exile, and that I had to do before Pesach. Now I already know what's my exile. Now I have the opportunity to start my journey, slowly, slowly going out of it. So at night when I count, that's just to arouse the memory, oh, I need to refine today something. But really, the action has to be is to refine my attributes. The reason why I do it with my mouth is because the mouth has the power, exactly what I spoke about before, is to create the reality. When I say today is Hod Shebegvura or Netzach Shebegvura, even though I don't know what it means, and I can guarantee to you that nobody knows what it means, maybe a few people know a little bit what it means when you're saying today is Netzach Shebechesed. Okay, so I said Netzach Shebechesed. I don't know what it means. I just say it. But since I don't know what it means, the fact that I'm pronouncing it with my words, Bedibur, then I'm allowing myself to reach to that level, and even without knowing, I can refine something in my neshama. Because the reality is that we don't really know. Very few people will understand, what did I do today when I said Hod Shebehod? Wow! So I said a very fancy word, and I sound like a Kabbalist, because I said some fancy combinations of Sefirot, but really, do I know what he did? What he did? No, I don't know anything. So therefore, our sages said, listen, we know you don't know. Just say it with your words, then the power of the words are very powerful. It will trigger what it needs to trigger. I need to understand that I'm going through a journey. And by the fact that I count something, I also need to meditate, read the words. And if you don't understand it in Hebrew, read it in English, that you understand what the words of Sefirat HaOmer says. And we will learn in the next couple of weeks, what are we saying? And why are we saying? I mean, if I'm in now in the week of Gvura, I mean, every week, now it's a little bit past the point, but in the week of Gvura, I need to understand that now I'm going to start refining the attribute of Gvura in me. So, what does it mean, Gvura? Hold on. What does it mean, a Gvura Shebechesed? I have to give a lot of kindness, but it has to have some limit in it. I want to give my kids everything. I want to give them toys and books and treats, but if there's no limit, then my kindness is going to hurt them. Has to be some gvura, some severity in it, some restriction. I'm going to give you X amount of treats. I'm not giving you all the treats. So chesed, kindness, is very good, but it has to have some severity, some restriction. And I have to look, we're going to go through it. I have to look in everything that I have to refine in the week of gvura, is I have to refine every aspect of the gvura in me. And sometimes I have a lot of gvura. Gvura is severity, that every person that comes, I will cut them right off. But even in that, I have to have gvura sheba gvura, to know when to back off. You have to be strict, but don't be crazy. And then I would do the tiferet sheba gvura. I have to have the severity, but to do it in a very nice, calm, subtle way. So every sfira can be dissected. Now we're not going to have the time for that, but we will go through the general idea that I have the tools. What do I need to do? Where do I need to reflect here? The point that I want to take from today is that the time of Sfirat HaOmer is to refine my vessels, to do what's called Tikkun HaKelim. Why? That comes the night of Shavuot. I just have to sit and eat my cheesecake, and I will get the godly revelation, the same thing that what our ancestors got at the time of Matan Torah. You think they understood what they saw there? They didn't understand anything. At some point, they got so scared that they told Moshe Rabbeinu, listen, we can't handle this. You go do what you need to do, then come and tell it to us. And it took Moshe Rabbeinu 40 days to digest what he just learned. And then it took him 40 years to give it over. And up until today, we're learning and dissecting it. So we don't really understand, but we have to do the physical part. And we have to refine these vessels. This is in general what we're doing at the time of Sfirat HaOmer, is we're cleaning and refining our vessels. And I have to understand, even that today I do know that you're going to leave today the class, you don't understand really how am I refining my vessel. Now just say it. Just make sure that you say it. I hope that you did not miss an night, that you can still say it with a blessing. If you missed it, then you'd say it without a blessing, but continue saying it without the blessing. Still count it. But what you need to internalize is that you have now 49 days of journeys. And every day, I have to go one step higher, and another step higher, and another step higher. And mainly, I have to recognize what's the exile that I have to leave from. And when I recognize the exile that I have to leave from, then I start working on myself. The point is to refine myself in such a way that when does come the night of Matan Torah, of Shavuot, then this light remains in me. Why? Because I'm able to refine myself and reach to the level of the Sfira of Bina, that the Ima is the mother that births the Shefa, and that will remain with me for the rest of the year. So Bezrat Hashem, we will continue in the next couple of weeks to go through all the Sfira, what I need to do, how I need to do, how it affects me, what I need to focus on, how to take advantage of this time. We're still, Baruch Hashem, we have a lot of time. And in the meantime, to remember that also, I didn't touch it today, we'll do it maybe another time, that all the laws that our sages taught us, that I'm not allowed to cut my hair during that time, men that trim their beards should not trim their beards, men that shave their beards, I hope with their machine, then should not even cut that. There's reasons why we don't touch the hair. There's also a reason our sages told us not to party during that time, not to listen to music. There's a lot of questions in that, but the reason is, in general, because it's a time of hitchadshut, of rejuvenation, and you cannot mix things together. And the same thing is that the hair is very, very holy. We're going to talk about it another time. There's no time now. But the fact that the hair grows, it's a sign of growth and rejuvenation. We just don't see that there's power in the hair. So we're going to talk about that too, but all the rules, all the laws that our sages told us, we need to follow it, not to listen to music, not to party, not to get married, not to do all sorts of things. We asked before, not buying new things. So, Bezrat Hashem, next time we'll go a little bit more about the actual laws, and mainly we want to talk about more about the, how it's affecting us and the mystical part of it. But till then, Bezrat Hashem, you should focus about concentrating on your journeys and slowly, slowly refining your kelim, your vessels. And Bezrat Hashem, in Matan Torah, we'll repeat on Chag HaShavuot, this time it should be the ultimate time when we receive the Itchadshut of the Torah. As it says, when Mashiach is going to come, it's going to be a new Torah, Torah Chadasha Mitit Itze. So we're striving to get to the point that Mashiach is going to come very soon and we're going to receive the Torah again. And if Chas V'Shalom Mashiach has to wait a few more days and it's not going to happen this Shavuot, then we receive it in the spiritual level. And we're going to explain that too. So in the meantime, we're going to wish you all just a great success in your Avodat, the job of refining your midot and fixing your kilim. And Bezrat Hashem, we will talk about it much more.